Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And we are here to review a ungodly slash godly amount of comics. We are god tier on the level of comics we're going to do this very week. What do you say, Pete? Are you ready to talk unbroken about some funny books?
I don't know about all that, but let's get into the stack, bro.
Stack it up. Pete, just sort of listening. Let's kick it off with a book called Ultimate Hawkeye Number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Taboo B. Earl and Dennis Camp, art by Michael Stamaria and Juan Fregeri. Pete, this comic is spinning out of the Ultimate Universe. In the Ultimates, we've had this introduction of Hawkeye, a character with a little bit of twist and turn to the way that they came to their powers or their weaponry, I guess. They weren't the Hawkeye costume and bow and arrow stuff wasn't meant for them to begin with, but yet they inherited it anyway. And so that's sort of what we learned in Ultimates. And then this is following them as they go. Out on their own. What did you think of this comic book?
All right. Well, I mean, this was okay. I'm not sure about the the new Hawkeye, kind of breaking into this weird Eyes Wide Shut sex party and then immediately getting kind of taken down. And then Clint doing the Han Solo kind of turned into the gold situation. I was hoping for a little bit more of a, like, their kind of take on Hawkeye or their kind of feelings on it. So a lot of stuff happening, you know. Great art. Love the pace. And I feel like once maybe we get past this, we can kind of get into it a little bit. But, I'll keep showing up for more of this. But I wasn't initially kind of knocked off my feet, if you will.
Wow, coming out strong with a medium take on this one. I actually really like this. I really like the setup at the front of the book we get from, I believe Dennis Camp sort of handled that part.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the Dennis Camp always.
I'm in the Dennis Camp, so we get sort of the reintroduction of the character. This is a character named Charlie Ramsey, who, as I said, sort of took the mantle when it was passed over by someone who we get to meet in the second story in this. But I like the prologue's awesome. It's badass. In the Ultimates book, I feel like this Hawkeye has been sort of like, I don't quite know what I'm doing. And in this opening story, I feel like that's all put to bed pretty quickly. So that was cool. Great takedown moment. And then we get into this world that is really different. Like, I like that it's a little bit of underbelly that we haven't seen as much in the Ultimates universe. I like we get some quotes from William Blake here, which I think is really awesome. I like William Blake. And plus, I think it helps establish a nice tone for this story as well. So that was really cool. I like this. I like the use of Ronin. First off, the middle section about, like, choice I thought was really cool. This character, I don't want to spoil it, but it's really it was a really smart use of storytelling to show off a piece of the character. And then we get the reveal of Ronin here. Later on, right?
Yeah.
That was cool.
Before the gold finger.
You didn't
moment.
Like that?
I mean, that's who I thought it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Clint.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, that's. I mean, if she's Hawkeye, then Ronan's got to be Clint, right? You know what I mean?
That was just a really great use of having, using the Ronan idea here, I thought was really just a good sort of breakdown of it, given the
backstory. Yeah, the only problem I had is he immediately turned to gold, so we didn't really get any conflict or kind of fun or maybe a battle or something, you know what I mean?
Bro, it's the Ultimate Universe. People are going down. This shit's almost over. They're going to introduce people and ice them up real fast. That's part of the fun of it.
That's maybe what your idea is fun. It's like, dude, I'm going to have this and I'm going to turn it to gold and then save it, but I would like to talk to them. Maybe they fought or...
You want to have a chat. You want to turn them to gold like at nighttime.
Like a nighttime gold. Yeah.
When the bars close, everyone gets turned to gold. In the meantime, have some fun, cut loose, make
like
friends.
Like a gargoyle situation where everybody can hang out, and then when the bars close, you turn to cement and you're frozen. And then each morning you kind of crack open new. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool. That's the opposite. They crack open at night, which I sort of is how I feel all the time, you know?
You're about to crack tonight.
I'm about to crack into so many pieces. I like this Hawkeye. I like the Charlie character. I think they are very interesting. So I'm fully on board with this. But let's move on and talk about another book. Something that Pete will no doubt like more. This is Superman number 30 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. This continuing on our dive into the Legion, the much more evil Legion, something that I'm fully in the bag for. We start this issue where we get a little bit of Saturn Girl, and it is exactly what I want this to be. Pete, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of got this kind of moment, and we get to see it more later on. This, hey, come to the Watchdollar. Me and Booster Gold got to have a talk. We've seen some shit, and we got to talk about it. So, great art and action. You know, Prime being a real Prime asshole, if you ask me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a little bit last time. Superboy Prime has, you know, the Deadpool power set of, like, awareness of the fourth wall. And I was like, oh, I see why they're doing this. And I was a little bit of, like, sort of a smug owl about it. But I actually really liked it here. It was cool. I think it's used sparsely and directly. As opposed to with Deadpool, it's sort of like a... just wildly firing off fourth wall breaking stuff. While this is much more like scalpel instead of a samurai sword. So I appreciate that. I think this story is just firing on all cylinders. I really like it. I like that it's setting up KO and still paying off all the all-in stuff and touching the absolute stuff. It is just... really working for me. It's the kind of big crossover stuff that I was talking about in the live show that I want to see over in the X universe. Feels like it's just using all the elements and just blowing them up to the biggest possible place.
Yeah, that brings up a good point. Check out the live show.
Oh, that's really nice. And check out the X-Men. Yeah. What I thought that's what you were going to say. But what you're really going to say, Pete, is Skinbreaker number one. You're going to say what you thought about it. This is from Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman with art by Kirkies. Finch. You got Kirkies and Finchies coming together here. Not Pete, but Alex and I talked to Robert and David over the summer, maybe a month and a half, 6 weeks ago, about this book. And it is... it's a great interview. They talk about it, the way that David Finch did the art in this. If you didn't listen to that interview, these are massive panels that he drew, like huge, huge versions of all of these pieces in here. Every page is gigantic, and then it's reduced down, which you'll see. There's incredible detail on the art here. Pete, you're an art freak.
Yeah, let's.
What did you think about this?
Yeah. I love the start of this book here, where it really starts off art focused here. We see just like a couple panels of just the world, just no words, no bullshit, just really kind of sitting in this world.
Words are bullshit.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know what I mean? So just so fucking pumped. And I also, badass cover. Like, this is a great cover. It gets me very excited about reading this comic and what's on the inside. So, yeah, I was really... I love the start, love the action, the world that this creates, the kind of heartbreaking ending, man. Holy shit. You know, but man, just really just kind of epic start. It's a, you know, it seems like a heartbreaking kind of world here where, you know, they take their children, they make them get sunburns to break their skin, which
break
is
their skin.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, I'm not going to tell somebody how to parent. You know what I mean? But yikes, bro. You know what I mean? Also, just a tough kind of way to run a group, you know? Like, hey, listen, the leader is elected. No, oh, sorry. The leader has to kill the current leader, and that's how you become. It's like, oh, dude, this is a rough group you guys roll with. So
that is the rules in Comic Book Club. That's why, you know, no one's come for us kings in quite some time, but we are pick off.
I don't like you putting that out there, you know what I mean? Like, I don't agree to that. I don't want to have to fight somebody to the death all the time, so
We could do it in a fun way, like slaps only.
A fun way
we could do it, slaps only. Shout out to Goldeneye.
Okay, slaps only, cool.
Yeah,
but getting back to this,
or slaps only, one hit, one kill, watch out for that.
Oh man, just really just kind of epic world building here, and was very excited to kind of get into this more. And just a heartbreaking turn at the end where this guy who, you know, you got to turn to your father and be like, hey, the guy who's raised me and taught me everything, I'm going to murder you. No, I mean, I guess that is kind of fatherhood, you know, a little bit, but, you know, kind of crazy to think about.
And owning a dog.
Okay, sure.
My dog's going to kill me. My dog's very Oedipal, trying to kill me. Have sex with my wife.
Think that's Jasper.
Normal for a dog.
Is
it normal for a dog? But talking about this book, in rereading it after doing the interview, because we got to read it then, like, it's sort of like what the Avatar movies were for movies. Like, this is in both just how detailed and sort of like 3D.
They had to invent
cameras
just to make this comic book. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, David Finch did, like, use extra large panels. He is sort of using, like, an IMAX of comic book.
Ooh, wow. You are really connecting this really well.
I am.
Yeah.
And I also think it sort of throws you into a world without giving you all of the mythology and what's happening. You sort of just start hanging out there, and then at the end you get a little peek about some of the elements, and I think we're going to get more of it later. It's really interesting. It's definitely worth, at the very least, pick up this comic and look through it, because I have a feeling it will then enter your purchase bag on your way out the door. But let's move on and talk about a comic that is Ultimate, and it's also called Spider-Man. And number 21 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by David Messina. So the last issue of this comic is number 24. We are coming up on it. This comic, you know, told month to month, like the way the Ultimate line has been going, building up to the Maker's Return. Even though it's coming down to the end, we're still getting just heavy new information dropped into every issue of this comic. Pete, do you find this comic overwhelming or just whelming?
Well, this is it. What's crazy about this comic is they introduced such an interesting idea here, right? We have this kind of like room of Mysterios, and
love that.
Yeah, this was like a cool idea, but then it was like immediately just kind of they were like, oh, we're gonna murder the room of Mysterios, and I was like, oh man, this was such a cool idea, this kind of group of Mysterios that kind of works together and has this kind of cabal type of thing. I also really love the kind of the negative art that we had kind of with the Mr. Negative character and the,
that's his whole thing.
Yeah. And the fight scene with Kingpin, it's just great use of art to kind of support this character. And then kind of like, the world and everything. I just, really impressed artistically, but tons of actions. This, was a great issue.
I love starting my day with a nice big bowl of Mysterios, you know. Peter, you like that as well? But you finish a bowl, you realize they weren't real at all. Illusion.
Oh, man,
hard light hologram. Tough. Gotcha. They get you every time. But like I was saying, like the fact that we're spending so much of this issue on a story that focuses mostly on these group of Mysterios and Mr. Negative telling his backstory, having it, these characters are not the main characters of this book. We get a little bit of Uncle Ben and J. Jonah Jameson setting something up. But I'm not knocking the story. I thought it was great, really great. Twist at the end, just the Mysterios as a group is such a fun idea, like Pete's saying. But it's just wild that this comic is still really pushing out into new territory, even though it's getting so close to the end. Shouts to that. I'm going to be sad to see this go. I hope we get some new version of this going forward.
Also, the kind of last panel reveal was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's where they keep the fun, at the very end. Except for in a comic like this one, Absolute Wonder Woman.
Yes! Well,
this is when Pete usually claps a couple times. From DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. This wrapping up our prison break for Wonder Woman and versus Clea in a sick maze prison with a bunch of mermen. You got a Minotaur.
Come on, if you have a maze, you got to have a Minotaur. I mean, what are you even doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I was in a corn maze this past weekend. That Minotaur was scary.
Running through.
He had corn horns. He had corn horns, Pete.
Dude, that is a crazy kind of weird fun that you have on the weekends.
But I will say, there's nothing like waking up in a corn maze and being like, all right, I got to get out of here, you know?
I don't know, man.
Because you know what you're having for breakfast?
Corn.
Nope, Mysterios. Great story.
So Absolute Wonder Woman, number 12. First off, cool cover, all right? Gets me excited for the insides. This rocks.
Just like someone's face.
I don't know. It sounds creepy when you say it. Yeah, this is Wonder Woman just kicking so much butt. I absolutely love this. She's wielding the trident, fucking shit up. I'm just having such a blast here. Just love the action. I love the story. This is just so much fun. Love the kind of tease of what's coming next, you know. And then we got Katana all Hannibal Lectered up in this. So
Not Katana.
Or I'm sorry, Zatanna.
Spoiler for the end, Zatanna.
Zatanna, yeah, my fucking spell correct. Fucked me on that.
How often do you say I got fucked by the spell correct one more time?
Well, unfortunately, it happens. You know what I mean? It's a part of my life because they're like, what are you trying to fucking say? Anyways, this
the AI is trying to kill Pete with a little bit of spell checky.
Yeah. But also, we got this kind of fun moment where we got to kind of see all the Amazons finding out that Wonder Woman's still alive, and that was a beautiful thing. Just pumped. Yeah, I just love this issue. This is just great comics, and I'm having an absolute blast with this.
We've raved about this comic for, I want to say, now years? 12 issues. So that's 1 year of our lives talking about this, and it's just such a pleasure. The sort of little alleyway on a rundown with this issue is Hayden Sherman's art. Because Hayden Sherman's doing a lot of books these days. Great to see that art in different ways. The Batman Dark Pattern stuff that Hayden's doing is really cool. This, though, is so specific to this book. It's got, like, this nice mythological color palette and wash to it. That's really cool. I want to shout out Jordy Belair, I think, is on colors here. And it's just so specific. It helps enhance the specialness of the writing in this book by having art that is reflective of that. I love all the action, like Pete said. This book is just written so confidently. Every little piece, you can feel it being like, and I'm setting this up for the future, and it's going to be good, and it's still a little good right now, so get ready for more. So, I mean, if you're not reading this, what more can we tell you? Send us your address. We'll come to your house.
And what's it going to take to get you into this Wonder Woman comic, all right? I mean, come on. Exactly. Kick the tires. Get inside. It's glorious.
Every one of these comics must go. We're crazy. These prices are crazy.
Down to the stack.
It is just funny. That's a way people used to sell things, they'd be like, these prices are low. I have to be having a mental breakdown. That's how badly I need you to have this car. I'm losing my mind.
Then you would like feel bad for someone's mental health and buy a car.
It's not as fun when you say it that way.
Oh.
I'm having a mental health crisis. Would you like to buy one of my Mazdas?
Sure would, if it helps you out.
Does that sell a car? Does that sell a car, or is it should be like, I'm Crazy Eddie and my prices are low? You choose which one of those is a better commercial. But let's do a quick commercial for Viking Moon number one from Image Comics, written by Joe Pruitt, art by Marcelo Frusen. This comic is great at the title, because you got Vikings and they're coming over to America like they did. They're like, this place is going to be easy to hang out in. And then all of a sudden they cross the indigenous people there. Problems, especially when you start to realize they got werewolves coming.
Oh boy.
Pete, how did you feel here about the Viking
movie? Well, first, badass cover. You know what I mean? I just won
$40 on a parlay that you were going to say that.
Okay, great. Well, congratulations on your parlay. Don't spend it all in one place, or maybe do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Go to a comic book shop and blow it. Yeah. But yeah, the Native American fight was a little rough, but they finally kind of, you know, sometimes when you get a badass cover, it's like, are you spoiling something or are you leading up to this? And in this comic, it kind of leads up to it. And so I'm excited to see what's going to happen on the other side of that. But the art and action has got me in.
I really enjoyed the art here. Really, like, the eyes are popping in this. Everyone seems stressed. But this, the art is really nicely rendered, I feel like, with the Vikings and just their dire circumstances. And we get a little bit of your Conan-style paneling later on. This is fun. I'm curious if we just get to know the characters a little bit more in the next issue, because they felt sort of like they were just a bunch of people who are like, let's be here. And I'd like to know more than that about them.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
But let's jump over to X-Men number 22 from Jed McKay and art by C.F. Villa from Marvel Comics. Now, we are on the doorstep of the Age of Revelation, the dawn of the Age of Revelation, as they say on the title of this, the cover page of this comic. Pete, this is a area of comics that you sort of dislike.
Yep.
But we are about to move into a major event where we're going to move like 10 years in the future. X means 10, Roman numerals. Very popular idea in the last few years. So that's what we're doing. And
you're talking about Norman. Oh boy, I can't even speak.
Because you're so excited about this comic.
I am so excited. Yeah. Well, okay. All right. Norman Rumels. Wow. I tried to say it and I can't.
Wow. I can't believe Roman numerals.
Roman numerals. Wow. Thank you for the help. I was
stuck
there.
If you started that, if you had tried it again, I can't believe I knew what you were saying.
Yeah, well,
Norman, you're saying Norman Rumerals.
Yes, I don't know. My brain got stuck there for a second. I'm still alive, though. That's what's fun about this issue? What am I a crazy person? Yes, I am. But this is just people bickering, Scott monologuing.
You don't like it.
we see here, like, you know, like the Juggies. I like the Juggies bit. That was a nice moment. But that's Juggernaut. The only. Yeah, they call him Juggernaut. Juggies was fun. And then Juggies and Beast are getting into a fight about, you know, trying to kill. And it's just insane to me because it's like, hey, Beast, you were evil just like a couple arcs ago and tried to kill Wolverine. So, like, this soapbox that you're standing on to talk to Juggernaut about killing people doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, what are we even doing here?
Well, I think he's trying to atone for that. And there's a lot of sort of like, yeah, the characters are, you know, meeting of the minds here. And, you know, I always hesitate to do this, but I do agree with you that the vibe of this X-Men comic is a little bit like, hey, life sucks, but I guess we'll also be a paramilitary organization.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's just like, I read comics for the bickering, I guess. Like, seeing...
I mean, sort of.
Family members just
That's what
bicker.
We do. That's what we do.
I guess, if we're going to get real meta about it.
But I will say, like, I like... this book does take the time to, like... move through all these characters and really like see what's up with them, what they're dealing with. They're all dealing with a lot because, like, you know, I said, like, it does feel like a bummer to be here. And I think maybe that's intentional because it does feel like they're in a stressed place. And that's when you get Revelation showing up. And we said there was a great standalone issue, I want to say like 3 or 4 back, that was one of my favorites of this series, where we just followed Doug and Warlock and Doug's. Are they married? Wife? Yes. As they were just sort of wandering around, and that set up this arrival here, and this jumps us right into Age of Revelation. And I like this. I think I'm excited for this event. I know people have been talking in our comic book club Discord and other places that they're not excited for this event. I am. I like when we get big swings. It reminds me of Age of Apocalypse, an event I also really enjoyed. So this, I think, is going to be fun, and maybe we are just putting the characters in places to create some drama, which I love drama. Save the drama.
This is all just like nothing happens. I mean, Ileana shows up and Scott and her fight in front of the cops. Like, I was like embarrassed for them. I was like, guys, don't have this conversation in front of these people. Like, you guys should be better in this as a team. Like, have a little bit of like, hey, let's talk about this later or something, because it's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? I know people aren't perfect, and like teams will have disagreements and stuff like that. That's all part of life. But like, I'm not saying I want to always see rainbows and sunshines with people, but also just like a whole issue where just everybody's just fucking bickering with each other. And like, what gets you excited about what's to come on this? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I like
man.
The way Doug Ramsey was is a tried and true X-Men, huge component of Krakoa and like organizationally and for good. And the fact that he has this sort of apocalypse stain on him and bit of evil, I think that's an interesting combo. I'm just excited for what 10 years in the future of the X-Men look like. I like to see where these characters get land in a place like that. That's fun and interesting.
Okay.
You know what? Let him go. Let him fight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I think that's where we're at. Who else are we seeing fight? Vampires and DC versus Vampires. World War V number 12 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, a.k.a.
Bergie!
And Andrew Klein, art by Otto Schmidt and French Carlo Magno. This is the conclusion.
Oh.
The conclusion. And honestly, in our conversations with Matt Rosenberg, I feel like maybe... we are not going to revisit this. We've been spoiled on this comic for years now, moving from...
yeah, it has been years.
From title to title, where we're really following this from the very first bit when I used that intentionally, when we saw, I want to say, was it Flash or Green Lantern that was biting people, and all of a sudden we got a vampire problem.
Yeah, we sure did.
How did you feel like this played out?
Well, first off, sick cover. You know what I mean? Raging Against the Light. I mean, that's harder for vampires than humans. So this is a very powerful image.
I think that's the real Achilles heel moment.
And this is just glorious. This is just glorious. What an ending. man, what a crazy, insane way. And I'm, you know, we're spoiling the shit out of this here, but love the way they took down Darkseid. I thought that was just so badass and insane and great. And this is unbelievable art, epic story that landed it so well. This collection just kicks so much ass. I can't wait. I just want to read it again. I thought the ending was so great. I wanted to go back and read the whole thing again. This is just glorious comic books, and just so happy I got to read this, because this is just badass fun. I mean, they're having such a good time with this, and it jumps off the page, and the action and the oh shit moments and everything is just, this is just great. They did such a great job with this.
There's some comics where every panel and every word just like hits. I feel like it's just tasty. I read this comic and I'm like, yum. I'm eating every panel up. Mm-hmm. And it's so complex. Like, this would be such a hard, it'd be hard to just summarize what's going on because of all the different characters, what they're doing, the different factions we've talked about, who's on separate missions, who's in the Tower of Fate, separate pocket universe and all that. And the prophecy about how Darkseid is killed, like all that stuff is complex, but just the way they tell the story is so clean that you are along for the ride right there with everybody the whole time. And then I want to shout out this backup where we just get a little extra bit of vampire busting adventure with the haunted tank.
Great stuff.
Big stories, small stories. That's what comics are all about. I'm really going to miss this book.
Yes.
I'm really going to pressure Bergie to make some more.
This is just so great. I don't want it to stop, but it was such a great run. And, this is going to be a great one to get in collection. And, I'm going to just keep reading this.
Same. You mean go back and reread it again?
Yeah.
Really good. Let's jump over to Hyde Street, number 9.
Oh, my God, this fucking cover.
Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Francis Portella. We're getting into some plastic surgery. This is like, he can't look at the cover. You're not going to get a nice cover out of him, nice cover, because this cover scares him. This is like Dr. Pimple
Popper. It's creepy as fuck, bro.
Do you ever watch Dr. Pimple Popper, Pete?
No.
Pimple Popper Pete.
I can't do any of those.
That's how I warm up for stage shows.
Oh, well, that's fun.
Pimple Popper Pete.
Pimple Popper. Lion Face, Lemon Face, none of that kind of stuff. Anyways,
I do Pimple Popper Pete.
This is creepy as fuck. And, I had to read this during the day just because I was so freaked out by the cover. But, we get this kind of creepy surgeon, creepy patients. And then
Dr. Ego?
Yeah, we get the Wolf Scout kid with the x-ray glasses on, and then we see the kind of where the x-ray guy kind of burns his eyes, so that's a huge moment. And then we get a dramatic card drop here, and that's I think bad news for the Scout kid, or maybe good news, but it's hard to tell. It seems like it's bad with the way Hyde Street rolls. So amazing art, thrilling story. This continues to fucking rock, bro.
Yeah, the format's really cool. Every issue not only has a little bit that's pushing our sort of overarching story forward, but most of the book is dedicated to featuring another one of the Hyde Street monsters, how they got to be. This one's really, I like the, there's a little bit of turn is where we see two people who we think are victims in the first third of the book, and we realize they join up to become his Dr. Ego's nurses, which is cool. And then the next issue just goes ahead and really sets up the next character. It's a nice format. It feels very like old school horror.
Yeah, Monster of the Week.
Monster of the Week, while still having a little bit of through line. So that's really cool. You can tell Jeff Johns is loving every bit of this, especially how he makes Pete's butthole get just a little bit tighter with every cover. That's something you can put on the trade. Let's do Battle World number 1
from
Comics by Christos Gage with art by Marcus Toe. So Battle World. This is a big world, but made of tiny pieces. And we get to see a bunch of, like a great Lego, you know?
Yeah, like a great Lego.
If all those Legos fought.
First off, cool cover. Yeah, I was, you know, having some fun with the Sentinels and that kind of first kind of fighting. But then they kind of like turned on each other and that got kind of sad for me. But great art, tons of action. Next issue should be interesting, especially if they rebranded Murder World number one.
Yeah, we get sort of, this is wild, the character choices are really interesting here. We get a very young Superman, we get a much older Ant-Man, we get Korvac, a character that I love. Like, you can tell Christos Gage is like, I'm going to do some wheelies on my Marvel history, and you can tell that he's enjoying it because there's a massive two-page back matter bit where he exhaustively goes through the reference that he's pulling from. That was really cool to see as well.
Gage knows his stuff. That is very clear.
Yes, definitely. Korvac, a great villain I like from Fantastic Four lore. The thing that's also interesting here is the end. Like Pete said, Murder World, like we go from a, like Battle World, Secret Wars, all that stuff is like big epic storytelling. And we land on Arcade being like, welcome to my little world. And I was like, oh, interesting. So I sort of like that as a swerve. We're not going up, we're going sort of back to the street. So, cool choice. This was a pleasant surprise for me.
Oh, nice.
Right? Don't you just love that? Not like a kick in the shins. let's talk Immortal Legend Batman number 2 from DC Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Matt Groom, art by Erica Durso.
Here we're
getting, this is Batman who's doing a lot of things that Batman doesn't normally do. Pete, how do you feel?
Well, love the art style. It's an interesting kind of new look. The colors are kind of brighter. I like this kind of look and feel to Batman. Feels new and exciting. So, yeah, I thought it was awesome. The great moves kind of taking down Bane. That was really badass. But then things got weird when it looked like Batman turned into Nightwing and then was like, hey, what's up with that Batman guy? I was like, what? What just happened? How did I get lost? And I was having a great time. So I got a little confused by the end, but I was on board for a while.
Nice. And who could ask for anything more? I've been liking this. I feel like it's really remixing sort of our Batman specifics in a new way, like Kyle Higgins, real command of big worlds like this and sort of anime-influenced storytelling, which is what you get big time here.
Were you lost when I was lost, or was that just me?
I mean, yeah, the book is sort of moving quickly through stuff.
You didn't think it was weird when he turned into Nightwing and then was asking about Batman and was like, hey, weren't you just Batman?
Well, I think that's just what happened.
Oh, okay.
If you turned
into Alex and then started talking about Justin, I would be like, what the fuck is happening right now? You know what I mean?
Nice. Well, I'm going to try to make that happen later. Okay, working on a flawless Alex Albin impression. But in the meantime, let's take a look into Pete's head as we do The Voice Said Kill number 3 from Image Comics, written by Cy Spurrier, art by Vanessa Del Rey. This is a comic I've been really enjoying, following a cop character in the swamps of the South. Yes?
I'm just saying, switch the comic icon. Oh, we're talking about the, you know.
Oh, great call, Pete. Really great. The Voice Said Kill. We're following a cop in the swamp who in the first issue accidentally killed someone. Yeah. And I thought like, that's going to be what this comic's about. And then in the second issue, she's just kidnapped by a gang of psychopaths who then find a submarine. Right. And this issue, it continues to get wilder as we maybe don't know exactly what's real. And a lot of people are killed pretty randomly.
Yeah, and also, what the fuck happened to the submarine? It seemed like that was a really important plot point, and then they just kept walking. You know, I was like, what? You know?
You find a submarine, you're like, all right, all aboard, let's go explore the Titanic.
Yeah.
You can't trust a submarine.
Well, sure, I can understand that, especially if you're like preggers, maybe you don't want to get on a tube and go underwater with a bunch of psychopaths. That makes sense. But I just thought, like, okay, the last one ended with the submarine. We're going to pick up on the submarine that was acting like the submarine didn't even exist. And I was like, who's the crazy person here? But first off, Let me back up the truck a little bit and just say beautiful, intense cover here. Sets a nice tone. This gets a little kind of meta and confusing where we're like the Preggers lady is hallucinating and, you know, she's in trouble and I'm really worried about her pregnancy and the health of that baby. But then you can't tell what's really happening and what's not. And she's kind of talking to herself and they're like, is she crazy? Are we all crazy? Then there's like the crazy kind of gets passed on a little bit. And then, but man, intense story, enjoying the hell out of it. The art is just really cool. The kind of swamp of it all and the way that's kind of drawn really sucks you into this kind of creepy world. So, yeah, I'm having a blast with this. Cy Spurrier is writing the heck out of it. I don't know, man. There's a lot going on. I'm hoping once it settles down, I'll be able to kind of get into it more.
I don't think it's going to. Cy Spurrier goes hard, and he goes hard in this comic as well. I think the Vanessa Del Rey art is very lush, very different looking and feeling, takes us into this place. Colors really support that by John Starr. You really feel the gator stink of
this. The gator moments are, yeah.
Yeah, great gator. Great Gators. This is one of my faves, so definitely pick this up. And let's move it over to one of Pete's likely faves. Mortal Thor number 2 from Marvel Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Pasquale Ferry. We got a Thor who doesn't know he's a Thor, but he does an awful lot of Thor stuff.
Maybe he does. I mean, how can you not be Thor and work that hammer like that, dude?
It's very funny how much he's just, like, doing Thor stuff to the point where in this issue he's got his hammer with a bungee cord attached to it so he can throw it and catch it. And I was like, I mean, he doesn't have to. It looks cool. It is cool. But I was like, you're going really hard to make him, like, replicate some Thor stuff.
Exactly, be Thor, because if he's not going to be Thor, I'm going to be pissed because he's throwing hammers around like he's thrown hammers before.
This guy's getting hammered.
Yeah, this guy's getting hammered. So this got really kind of really fucked up for me because, I was having a blast with this dude and his hammer work. And, you know, like, I feel like a lot of kids, I'm going to put a bungee cord on my hammer and see what kind of trouble I can get into in the neighborhood. But,
learning message.
Then the reveal that Blake is the head of the snakes and, you know, rhyming is fun, but Blake looks like the human Donald Blake that Thor used to kind of turn into back in the day. So now I'm losing my mind being like, yo, who's Thor? The hammer guy, I was like, okay, I guess he's Thor because he can wield a hammer like nobody's business. But now I'm like, maybe this little Blakey kid is actually Thor because he was also a version of Thor. So now I'm confused and I got to check out the next issue just to make sure I'm not losing my goddamn mind. Yeah.
They gotcha. Yes, I really like this. I think this is a fun take, despite what I was saying about the goofier moments. Thor just goes to hang out with his neighbor and is like, hey, yeah, the needle, I'm just going to sew up multiple wounds in my body, I don't know.
That's what neighbors do, though. You know what I mean? They come over, some want salt, some want sugar. Others want to just sew up open wounds.
You mind if I do it here in your apartment? Yeah. Cool.
We'll now, just also, keep talking, have a conversation.
While I'm doing it, also, like, he sews up a giant scrape on his forehead and doesn't say shit about it. He's like, fine. That would hurt so much.
Yeah, it makes it seem like he's Thor because who else would be able to, you know what I mean?
But I think he's very much mortal, so he should be going like, owie, ow, a lot when he's doing that, I would think. I love the reveal at the end of Donald Blake presumably being behind the chair, the villain here. We've got a character named Lucky who behaves a lot like Loki. Coincidence? Probably.
Well, what do you think about the Blake snake situation? Because
Blake the Snake Roberts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously one of the best of the snakes, you know. Jake the Snake was a legend. But before we go too far down old WWF wrestlers, I just think that, like, what's the move here? Do you want Thor to be the snake guy who is the leader of an evil group of snakes? Or do you want Thor just to be kind of the, I'm not this guy, but I am this guy?
I feel like maybe we're going to get back to a continuity of Blake being a part of Thor. And the only way to do that is bring these two guys together, one a little evil, one pretty good, and find the mix of a person in between.
Okay, I just don't like the Snake Blake of it all. You know what I mean?
Because of the rhyming or because of he's a bad guy?
Both.
Wow. Twist. All right, well, let's stick with it and see if you like it. I also really love the Pasquale Fairy art. Gives
yes.
it a nice, different look. Speaking
is
of
this the first time we're talking about the art? The art is glorious. I'm sorry if we didn't. We're giving more art
yes.
love. We should be.
Everyone's mad. Pasquale ran out of the room crying. Let's talk Street Sharks number one from IDW, written by Stephanie Williams, with art by Ariel Medel. What do you think about this, Pete? Street Sharks, toys? In a cartoon, maybe, from the past?
Yeah, there were a cartoon and a toy back in the day. This missed me. I was just old enough where this didn't, you know, speak to my, like, kind of like, oh, cool, I'm looking for some more, like, cartoon toys that I can buy.
Aren't these guys basically just, they're just, like, just as good as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
How dare you. Although this does a good job of kind of capturing the cartoon, I feel like, and the commercials that I've seen. This was fun, a little chaotic, which this is part of the brand, and this was action-packed, which was great. Yeah, I felt like they did a good job of like capturing that old show and kind of commercial.
I think it's crazy that these sharks swim through pavement.
Don't well, you when you're weird? A shark, I mean, when you know, it's hard to know when to stop swimming. You know what I mean? Do you just, when you get on land, do you stop?
I just don't know how physically they can swim through pavement. And they're such tiny little muscle dudes that maybe, I guess they can do it. But I don't know, the shape of them is hard to take them seriously.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
Tight jeans, ripped abs, also sharks.
Well, you got a problem with jeans on sharks?
Yeah, I guess. Why would you do it?
I mean, because jeans are cool, you know? So if you're a shark, you want to be cool.
Let me ask you this. Are they covering up, like, major genitalia in these street sharks?
I don't know, maybe. I'm not familiar with
like,
shark
give me
genitalia.
Get into the anatomy. actual sharks have penises.
Okay.
They're hidden, mostly.
Okay.
These penises, but they're not hidden by blue jeans and, like, a tight trucker belt.
Well, they could be.
Wow, good take.
Yeah.
Pete's selling jeans to sharks. My man Pete's such a good salesman, he could sell jeans to sharks.
Hey, man, don't knock that market till you've tried it, you know?
Yes, true. Their very sharp scales would love to be covered with a heavy denim.
Oh, nothing
like acid washed
heavy denim. Yeah, that's tough to swim in. Come on, man.
Yeah. Well, those street sharks sure are jawsome. I think they want us to say that.
No. Oh, okay.
Let's move over to Justice League Unlimited number 11, which is a prelude to
DC's prelude to
KO.
DC KO. Says it right on the cover, man.
Yes.
And all hell breaks loose.
Yes. This is another big event happening at the same time we're getting the events in the Marvel side of comics. This one also coming out of Superman 30 and what's happening there. Pete, how'd you feel about this? No holds barred.
Well, I mean, they kind of sold a lot on the cover, so I was expecting a lot. And we did kind of have a really tense moment here with Mr. Terrific. And Parademon almost getting the best of him.
Yeah.
But luckily, he was smarter than a Parademon, and I feel like that's going to be a fun game show later.
Yeah.
Are you smarter than a Parademon? Yeah. And, so, I don't know. It kind of ended and was like, all this doesn't matter, or will matter again later. But it got resolved, so no stress.
Well, it ends in the same way that Superman 30 ends, which is cool.
Superman being like, we got to talk.
Yeah, we got
to
talk.
Hey, I've seen some shit, and we need to talk.
There's a big portal behind him that goes to some universe that I feel like is absolutely interesting.
Mm.
But I just really like reading this comic in combo with Superman 30, the propulsive nature of the DC universe getting into this big event has been great. I feel like it has been really hitting the gas pedal really hard from All In, still going strong with big momentum from all the Absolute titles and all these sort of main tentpole comics as well. So, like, I'm super excited for this event.
Wow, look at you. Because I'm worried that the KO is just going to be okay, but time will tell.
Wow. Put that on a T-shirt. Black Cat number 2 from Marvel Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Gleb Melnikov. You know I love Black Cat.
This is all about the JT Sizz, man. I mean, this is fun. This is just... you know, robbery gone wrong, and the vampire hates New York City. This is just fun. And then Black Cat goes viral, and guess what? J. Jonah Jameson isn't going to like that at all.
Yum, yum. He's trying to eat up some of those likes and subscribes. That guy's, he's just a freak for those it follows.
And then the Daredevil shows up, and he's helpful. So that's fun. This is just a light, fun comic, kind of great art. Maybe a little too much TNA for my taste, but it's still
a blast. You're talking about the cover? Here's the thing. My main quibble is, I don't know if it's entirely fair, but like the Black Cat we have on the cover of this comic, that's the Felicia Hardy I know. The face structure, the way she looks. The Black Cat on the interior looks very different. It feels like a different person. And so that is just keeping me a little bit at arm's length from this. I think the story actually is really good, though. I like that Black Cat is struggling with her super heroic side. We get some cool page with the Sandman. Adam Sandler, no, just kidding, the Sandman. The vampire stuff feels like vaguely what we do in the shadows, and then a nice setup for the next issue. Excuse me, I do think it's interesting. She's... looks at Daredevil, who's fully masked up, and she's like, this guy's beautiful. What did you think about that? Can you really look at Daredevil? He just got his mouth out.
Well,
he doesn't have his eyes out.
Yeah, but sometimes the mouth is the sexiest part of somebody. You know what I mean?
Really?
I
don't know. In what way? But what is that?
Man. People are attracted to certain things. You know, sometimes somebody's like, oh, man, her eyes drive me crazy, or their mustache is glorious. Or
You're up in a two towns over, absolutely crushing it at the improv open mic. You come home, have a great night out at the bar afterwards. You party like the star that you are on the stage, coming from the backline hero, top rope, banging out the scene work. And then you come home, you're like, oh my God, Justin, you'll never believe this. I met the girl with the hottest mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's you're like, checks out, makes sense. Everything checks about out. That little story that I created, that little tale that I weaved is totally normal and true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people love somebody's wit, somebody's humor.
You like straight teeth and a strong tongue.
I don't know, man. People have got their things. I'm just saying this was fun and enjoyable. It's tough when a cover throws you out or, you know, misleads you or whatever. And that can be tough because it's like they usually have a different cover artist from the inside artist. Yes. So, it can either win you over or push you away. And I'm sorry that it did that to you.
Quick answer, Daredevil, hot mouth, your opinion.
I don't know, man. I'm not
quick
ended, but if she likes this, if she thinks he's got a hot mouth, then he does.
Do you think he has a hot mouth?
No, I don't.
Okay, I agree with you. I don't think it's that hot. Foggy Nelson, hot mouth.
Oh, yeah, That guy's got it.
That guy's lips are smoking. Yeah,
he's the total package. You can't convince me otherwise.
Let's change tones completely and talk about news from the Fallout number 4 from Image Comics, written by Chris Condon, art by Jeffrey Allen Love. A dark story told in silhouette as some of our characters, a trio of people who are trying to get away from the disaster that's befallen this small town out in the Southwest, have made some choices that seem pretty bad, and they are facing some potential consequences here. Pete, this book, the art is fantastic. I really like the way it's so spare but still telling a story. We're getting a real flair for the characters and understanding of them, and we never even see their faces. We can't see if they have hot mouths, yet we still enjoy them. Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, I love this art style, this black and white, these powerful panels, less words, more power. I love it. This is tense but great. Yeah, it seems like it's like zombies chasing them, but we can't really tell. I mean, that's part of the kind of fun and the oh shit of what's happening. But yeah, then they stumble across a graveyard, and then we got to tune in next time. And you know what? I will, because I'm having a blast with this. The art leads the way and sets such an amazing tone. And yeah, this is tense and great. And the art does such a great job.
Tense and intense. Read this in your favorite graveyard. Twilight Zone number one from IDW and by Dan Waters, art by Morgan Beam. The Twilight Zone is back in comic book form, where we get a standalone issue following someone who has made some choices that drag them right into Nasty Town.
And just for our listeners out there, in case you're like, hey, that's not the legally, that's our interpretation of the Twilight. We don't want to get sued. Yeah, this is as close as we can get.
So like, I could do a pitch perfect rendition of that song if I could, legally could, but I'm legally. But Pete is our lawyer, as we talk about on other podcasts, and thank you for catching that. And thank
also,
you for miss auto tuning me, like making me sound worse on purpose.
Yeah, it's hard to do because you're classically trained. All right, yeah, this is also black and white fun here. Love the twists and turns. This really felt like a classic Twilight Zone episode. So great job of capturing the Twilight Zone and kind of transferring it on into comic form. The dull kind of face people is just kind of a great. Cool idea, well executed. The second story, short but creepy. So, yeah, great team. I was impressed by this.
Human beings, they're the real monsters. It's interesting reading this in comparison with Hyde Street, which definitely owes some of its storytelling mojo to the Twilight Zone. But very different. This feels much more classic. And I like the real humans are the ones who are at fault at the end of the day. Oh, but a great start to this. I am curious to pick up more of these. But let's talk a comic that I am fully in the bag for. Storm number 12 from Marvel Comics, written by Marwe Ayodele, art by Mario Santori. This, concluding the Thunder War, where Storm gets taken down pretty heartily. And then comes back in an awesome way. I love the opening sequence here, which was featuring Brother Voodoo and him sort of entering the story for the future.
Yeah, just stepping out of a frog, man. You know what I mean? Just doing the old frog portal.
Yes, you know what I mean? The old frog portal.
I mean, first off, sick cover. But, yeah, just fun start to this where, you know, we get Brother Voodoo just stepping out of a frog. And, you know, then Lady Death wants him to be her avatar. And, that doesn't seem like a good plan. So we'll see how that all unfolds. But meanwhile, Storm is
sorry, we should call him Dr. Voodoo. He goes by Dr. Voodoo these days.
I'm sorry. Apologies. I don't want to undercut his status. But meanwhile, Storm is fighting gods and monsters, and it is, you know, borrowing power and winning, and the shit is crazy. But, love this art, love this action, doing such a great job with Storm. And then we got a little tease for the next issue. It's a rogue Storm, and that sounds fun.
Great betrayal at the end that really set up some interesting stuff for the future. And this book is top of the X-Men line. Definitely pick it up.
Yes.
Let's jump over to Superman Unlimited number 5 from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott, art by Raphael Albuquerque. Hey,
oh, the Kirky and Slott together? I mean, come on.
Yep, we're slipping into the Kirky slot for this one and talking this Unlimited Superman. I'll get to it. I'm setting it up. This Unlimited Superman and the Kryptonite Kingdom, where Superman goes to hang out. Would you go to a place with your greatest weakness, Garbage Plate Town, Pete? That seems like a crazy idea.
Yeah, that would just be not good. I would not make it out of that town alive. You know what I mean? You have to eat your way out, and that's it's a tough way to live. But, first off, cool cover. Fun last panel. Love the, spoilers, but the Lois Lane going, surprise. Just funny. Very funny. And that's what Slott brings to stuff. I love his sense of humor. It's nice to kind of have that layered in there in tense moments. Great art and fun with the kryptonite. We get the gold Superman crawling out of the earth there. But fun monkey dude there working at the Daily Planet. So that was interesting. I feel like this is in a great team and great hands here. So it should be interesting.
Very different feel from the other Superman book. Dan Slott really carving out his own territory in this comic, which makes a lot of sense. That's something that he loves to do. He's setting up a lot of stuff, especially with, no surprise here, Kryptonite and its relationship to Superman. But let's talk Sleep number 5 from Image Comics by Xander Cannon. This is a comic we've talked about a lot.
Yes.
And how it's... The premise is just really working. Of each issue, our main character wakes up and is like horrified by what he's done to his small town. The mystery keeps unfolding.
Or may have not done.
May or may not have done.
It could be him. It could not be him. I mean, it seems like it's pretty much him. But
I feel like that's what we're getting, that maybe it's less him. Could be the reveal we're going to get at the end of this. But this comic definitely pushed it forward. He has someone that he's working with to try to unravel this. The art keeps being excellent. The palette mostly in black and white with red highlights.
The red highlight is such a cool effect and just works so well as a storytelling technique in the art here. It's just such powerful moments. We have like splashes of red, but then they come up with the idea to kind of make sure that everyone is safe, is to kind of put him in all red here, where he's got to go down into the kind of the mind. So yeah, just so interesting, so creative, so cool. It is driving me nuts that we're 5 issues deep and we still don't know.
That's the point. That's called
suspense.
I'm
having a great time. Love this more, please. But it'd be great if we started to get some more answers at some point. You know, I mean, if we're issue 20 and they're still pulling this shit, I mean, come on, bro. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's what's going to happen. I feel like we're actually approaching the end pretty quickly here. I really like this. Like I said, the premise really works. Someone who wakes up from sleeping and is like, what have I done? I have the opposite problem. I don't sleep and I look at myself and say, what have I done? So I'm really enjoying that.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that, bro.
I'm also enjoying this comic. But let's talk about a real bummer sitch for our guy. Death of the Silver Surfer, number 4 from Marvel Comics, written by Greg Pak,
art by
Sumit Kumar with Tiago Palma. Greg Pak's telling a wild story. When I first saw this, I thought this was going to be sort of a melancholy exploration of the Silver Surfer at the end of his life. But no, this is like a knockdown, drag-out, emotional story where Greg Pak's introduced a bunch of new characters, while also featuring the Fantastic Four, and they are just out here fighting Galactus's blood and all this wild stuff. We're getting some like specially rocked up thing stuff happening. This is much more of a big action adventure than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Pak is a hell of a writer. The art's unbelievable, and this is a fucking cool-ass cover, if you know what I'm talking about. This is some real badass shit here. But yeah, love this action. This is some heartbreaking stuff. We see this woman, how she became the Silver Surfer, the rage that she has. It's beautiful. It's sad. It's moving. It's powerful. That mom stuff was just killing me. Love this art. Really love this writing. Love the last panel. Just amazing quality comics right here. Fucking great fucking team. This is just, this is awesome.
Yes, indeed. I agree. Let's talk Orphan and the 5 Beasts. Bath of Blood, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics. Written and drawn by James Stokoe. Man, this is some, the art is wild, it's fun, it feels very like manga, but with a sense of humor. As for the story, I don't really know what's happening, but remember the earlier version, the earlier arcs of this book, or the earlier titles, I should say, were about food, meat that made you crazy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we're still exploring like food and taking control of people, I feel like, in this.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the art has got this kind of element of kind of chaos and violence. There's this kind of just the way it's drawn is so unique and cool. It really sets up this crazy world where anything can happen, and it's bloody, over the top violence and action, and it's cool. It is really awesome. I agree with Justin. It's not as clear as to what everything is happening, and then we kind of got like a Wednesday Addams kind of thing, like the hand thing, and that the thing from Fantastic Four. So that gets really kind of crazy, but. Yeah, I mean, the art is just so kind of unique. And the writer artist does amazing stuff. So I'm on board, and hopefully it'll make sense later.
It's like a madcap multicolor samurai movie from back in the day.
Nice.
If you like any of those words, check this out. One book I love is Lazarus Fallen, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Greg Rucka, art by Michael Lark. One of my favorite books currently on the stands. We're slowly building up toward a massive confrontation between Forever Carlyle, the Lazarus, or like immortal chosen fighter for a corporate family in a post-apocalyptic or distant, not too distant future. Where every family has a Lazarus and they do battle, but Forever and her twin sister, Infinity, have broken off, rebelled. They are in hiding as her family tries to track her down, as well as a former friend, Lazarus, named Sonia. That stuff's coming to a head with some interesting revelations about Forever's relationship with her sister, who is her clone, but seems to be a little more... living a little harder than Forever has, and that's just such a fun, subtle choice. The art's so nice and different and sort of representative of this colder world, and Greg Rucka's writing just great moments from the small detailed stuff to the big stuff.
Yeah, this is insane. There's a lot going on, but it's also kind of funny that it's like in the middle of all this kind of end of world stuff. This one character's like, "Hey, I know this is bleak times and stuff, but you ever tried sex? Oh, you should have it. It's really pretty cool. You should try it when you get a chance."
Can't knock the message.
Yeah, I just thought, I was like, "Oh, that's an interesting conversation to have at the end of times there." So yeah, fun. Really impressive art. Interested to see how this is all going to kind of unfold.
Yeah, it is unfolding like a great piece of origami. You know? So all you right. Sort of want that to stay folded. But let's talk about something that I know Pete's going to like because it's on almost all of his T-shirts. Godzilla yes. Destroys the Marvel Universe, number 1 from, no surprise, Marvel Comics, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier Duggs and Pace Medina. You guessed it. Godzilla's fighting everybody.
Yeah, why? Come on.
But why? One wonders. Why is Godzilla so mad? When I watched Godzilla as a kid, I was like, Godzilla's just going out for a walk, and suddenly everyone's bothering him. So he's like, oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to smash some stuff. This Godzilla feels like he's like, I hate Gambit. And I'm like, why do you hate Gambit, dude?
I agree with him. Gambit's super annoying. Yeah, so first off, fun cover. X-Men try to take on Godzilla. Magneto uses Wolverine like a drill bit, which was really fucked up. And then Black Panther's like, yo, just bring him to Wakanda. We'll take care of him here. And I'm like, you sure about that? I don't know about that move, but we'll see. Next issue, they're teasing a giant-sized Hulk versus Godzilla. I'm in. That sounds fun. I'm all about it. I'm surprised no one's brought up Fing Fang Foom yet. But we will see what happens. But, yeah, very excited about this solid first issue. Yeah, don't fuck with Godzilla. Everybody's got to learn that the hard way.
It just seems strange. Godzilla is a strange character. I also didn't realize Godzilla has super healing, essentially. Wolverine is drilled into Godzilla and then the wound closes instantly. I was like, is that part of him? Okay. But I was pleasantly surprised by where this ended up and some of the fight moments. This title is having fun. And that's most important of all.
Have some fun, make some comics.
Have some fun, make some comics, talk about the comics on your podcast. Last Starship, number one from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Art by Adrian Bonilla. We got some Star Trek fun here. I talked about this on the live show because I was intrigued by this premise. I've never really learned much about this part of the Federation called the Burn, where basically everyone's wiped out and a handful of survivors have to figure out what to do next. So I was fully on board with all this info that was coming to us. I like the reveal later on of who comes to their aid and the next steps going forward. I won't spoil it. But this is the kind of stuff that you, the risk you can take in comics is getting into this part of the continuity that I feel like, you know, they're less likely to touch in television and movies.
Yeah, I agree. Really fun story. Love the twists and turns. Cool take on kind of things and great kind of captain choice. So, yeah, I enjoyed this. Solid art. I don't want to spoil it, but this is definitely worth getting involved with because even if you're not like the biggest Star Trek fan, you can still pick this up and have a blast just from kind of general knowledge. So, yeah, if you're kind of like, oh, Star Trek's not, I'd still say check this out. It's pretty cool.
Yes, indeed. Fully agree. One of my faves of the week. Let's talk Escape number 2 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Daniel Acuna. Another one of my faves. This is Rick Remender's new title, featuring some animals in a World War II type situation. We saw them going Memphis Belle style, trying to drop a bomb on their enemies, the fascist bats. And in this issue, we get, at the end of last issue, our main character is shot down behind enemy lines with no one to help him. This issue, we get him sort of collecting himself and a major backstory on his life, which I thought was really involving and interesting. And the art that Daniel Kuhn is doing here is like so dark and brooding at the same time. It's fun animals. Put a pin in that idea for a comic we're going to talk about in a couple minutes.
Yeah, so this is just unbelievable comics. I love this. I love the art. I love these characters. I love this world. It's Rick Remender, so I'm very scared because we get this heartwarming backstory. And I'm like, Remender, don't do all this and then kill the character, bro. Like, come on, man. So I'm really worried about what's going to happen. I'm really – but, man.
Who could kill a cute little dog?
Oh, don't kill that adorable dog family. Yeah, but this is awesome. This is just such a interesting cross of ideas and philosophies and such a kind of mix them up, kind of mash them up. So, yeah.
Mix them up, mash them up.
Yeah, so we got Nazi mice. Is it mice or cats?
I think it's bats.
Bats, okay.
Nazi mice or cats?
Nazi bats.
Nazi bats. Let's talk The Thing number 5 from Marvel Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Justin Mason. This comic Pete was going to bat for. What do you say, Pete? What's so good about this thing?
Well, first off, a fun cover. And Tony Fleece and Fleece, this comic kicks Fleece in ass, man. Yeah, I just think this comic has everything. You know, you got superheroes looking out for the little person and kicking butt. Yancey Street representing. I mean, I loved how the thing dropped off the garbage to Kingpin and trashed his door. And this is just awesome. This is a perfect example of what Thing is and what the Thing can do. And I absolutely love this. This was in my sweet spot, and it's in great hands. So I was I absolutely love this.
Great use of just a big superhero fight story combined with a very human story that had real pathos to it.
Yeah. Like
the villain being so close to home, the really feeling for the young girl and the Thing fighting for her. Yeah. I did think it was interesting that the fight spills out on Yancey Street and everyone's like, hey, knock it off down there.
Knock it off. I'm trying to sleep over here.
They're throwing fire at each other. very exaggerated New York. We should go hang out on Yancey Street, see what kind of trouble we can get into. They seem like absolute nightmares.
No, they seem like pleasant human beings who are just really nice New Yorkers that come together at certain times when they need to.
Just like the characters in our next book. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring, number 3 from IDW. It's by Patrick Horvath. And this is one of those books that when I was reading, I was like, uh-oh, Pete's going to have nightmares if he can even finish this one at all. So I ask you, Pete, were you able to finish reading this book that was definitely scary for our little guy?
No, I can't. I can't read this. It's got amazing art, but this is way too creepy for me to even fuck with. So, I couldn't. It's hurt.
This book is awesome. We get a bunch of backstory on how our serial killer became who she is in the first arc and in this one. And so much tension, even between the flashbacks and the present-day action. I love it. It's bloody. It's horrifying. While at the same time, it's just such a great, like, sociopathic dive into the backstory of this character.
But the real kicker for me is this having this kind of, like, Berenstain Bears artwork that feels like your childhood come back to fucking murder you in horrible ways.
That's what it does, man. That we set ourselves up. That's when we're 6.
I don't know why that's fun for you, but
I stopped maturing at 6. I need to be honest. And so did you.
Yeah, sure. I can agree with that. I feel like I peaked at 6. But
you peaked. That was a Pete peak.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't, you know, this is like your childhood being like, hey, man, why don't you come back for one more fucked up visit? And you're just like, no.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with going back for one more fucked up visit.
No, no, dude. Don't go back. That's what I'm trying to say.
Maybe you should. How about you go back to deal with one of the universal monsters, Pete? Like the Invisible Man number 2 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by James Tynan, the 4th art by Danny. Alex and I talked to this team as well over the summer.
Oh, man.
Where we got to hear James's take about sort of bringing the different elements from the Invisible Man canon together in this comic, the classic movie elements, the relationships. It's a great interview. Go ahead and listen to it. But Pete, what did you think of this book since you came in with fresh eyes?
Well, first off, JT4 does great work, and this is a nice cover. I love the kind of art style. Sets a great mood for this comic, kind of old-timey fun, if you will. Here you got the mad scientist doing his experiments, and then you get an invisible cat, which is a problem. If you know cats, that's really going to be a problem.
Yeah, the only way we defeat cats is because they're so visible.
Yeah, that's really
it. Their weakness.
That's their one weakness, and you take that away, and you got a real problem on your hands.
You're effed. You're going to have to puff that fluff.
And hopefully they don't kill that monkey, but it's not looking good. You know what I mean?
Yes, in fact, that happens in this issue.
Yeah, so, it wasn't.
It's
cool.
Really not looking.
I was like,
good
don't kill that. As soon as they showed that monkey, I was like, don't kill that monkey, bro.
I think you see its brain spilled out. So they definitely
just upset.
They definitely slapped that monkey. They defeated that monkey in Slaps Only One Hit One Kill. I will tell you that. I like this title a lot. I like the details that James Tynan is adding, this sort of romance that is just not a romance. It has the structure of this romance between a interesting scientist and a sort of down-on-her-luck woman, when really it's like a tragic fake romance from these characters who are in just bad places all across the board.
Yeah, don't really know each other.
It's great. It has that sort of emotional everyday horror on top of the larger Invisible Man stuff. Def pick that one up. Let's talk Quick Stops, Volume 3, Number 2 from Dark Horse Comics.
Hit you in the feels.
Yeah, we're getting something by Kevin Smith, art by Ryan Gowda. This comic, this series is sort of jumps into the Askewverse, Kevin Smith's movie universe, and explores different people here. This one is a memorial issue to Shannon Doherty.
Yeah, this is really touching. Just beautiful.
Really nice.
Yeah, Kevin Smith, you old softy, you. This is great. This gets you right in the feels. This is a love letter to Sharon Doherty. It's also a behind the scenes of what their relationship was like and what made her so great and all the things she did for him. And it's a love letter. It's a thank you letter. And it's nice that Kevin Smith kind of opened up and shared this. I feel like as fans of his work and her work, this was a really nice thing to do and really was just, I think, very touching and very beautiful. So I was very moved by this. I'm happy that Kevin Smith shared all this with us. And yeah, this was really just really nice and a fun kind of memory lane to go down.
Yeah, it is really sweet. I like in the back half we get a scene that they talked about on Shannon Doherty's podcast before she passed. We should say she did die, I want to say, last year. So I don't know, it was this year. She was in memoriam on the Emmys this year. And we get to see them do a scene from an unmade sequel to Mallrats. Mallrats was the movie that they worked together on. I was... to make this slightly about myself, I worked with Shannon Doherty on the Web Ventures of Justin and Alden, a digital series that my buddy Alden and I did.
Alden is now Verizon famous.
Alden was the voice of Verizon for 3 years. He just wrapped up on that.
Oh, man.
But if you want to see me from 15 years ago looking like an absolute baby... it's a 5-episode series. We worked with a bunch of other digital famous people. Felicia Day, Milo Ventimiglia was in this same episode as Shannon Doherty. A ton of people from around the world from back then. It's still online if you search it, and you can see the final episode with Shannon Doherty in it as well. It was really cool. She was very nice, but she was like, I want to do this in like... an hour and a half. And we were like, got it. And we banged right through it. And it was very strange, but fun and funny. So this hit home for me as well in a much smaller capacity, but cool. And the art, hard to draw these people who are real. And this artist, Ryan Gowda, really, really nails it.
Yeah, agreed.
Let's talk Undiscovered Country number 33.
Yes.
This series as well coming down to the final little bits here pretty quickly from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule and Scott Snyder, art by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. It's hard to explain what's happening here, but some of our characters are on the moon trying to stop America, trying to plot-wise, stop the destruction of America, but really metatextually, like subconsciously define what America is in this far future, but also today. This book has been going on for a long time and feels like a real exploration. This feels almost like a really cool comics-based art project where Charles and Scott are reckoning with some ideas about America through the lens of far future sci-fi, and the art is backing that up. So I do like this, even though it would be hard to say the actual story right now.
Yeah. This continues to be impressive artistically, story-wise and art-wise. There's a lot happening all at once here. Crazy last panel reveal. Amazing art. Yeah, I just really want to see how this epic story is going to land and end. So I'm excited about that because I feel like reading this all again in a collection would make more sense and kind of be easier to digest. So, yeah, just a really amazing team on this. Just enjoying the hell out of this while it's still around before it kind of wraps up. I'm very excited about it.
Indeed. Enjoy what's around. Just like Archie versus Minor Threats, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Patton Oswalt, Jordan Bloom, Timmy Haig, art by Scott Koblish. You guessed it, your favorite heroes and villains from Minor Threats are meeting up with the Riverdale gang, and they are having some fun. We get some classic superheroics from the Archie characters. Archie down on his luck. Betty and Veronica just not on his team. What's happening here, Pete?
Well, this is fun. This is a fun mashup here. I also love the line that says, "Sunset this motherfucker." Yeah. Just fun mix of silly Archie-style art and serious situations here. We got Salem working some magic, which is cool. I just love the tone of this. This kicks ass. Josie and the Pussycats rocking with Barfly, which is great. Yeah, just having an absolute blast of this. This really is kind of rewards fans who love Minor Threats and have been reading along. This really pays off a lot of stuff in a cool way and then throws it in the Archie world just for a fun kind of matchup of art styles. And, well done.
Not only is it a mashup of the two different styles, but it really, like, gives focus and time to each side of this crossover. You get, like, a lot of, like, fun Josie and the Pussycats with Jughead, and then the Fly Guy from Minor Threats is just sort of hanging around with them. And then you get some more, like, action sequence stuff where the art is moving between the very Archie Dan Parent style that Scott Kobish is doing here and the grittier, grosser stuff from Minor Threats. So this is... this is fun. This is a successful crossover, and I like the way we set something up for the next issue that I think is going to be cool.
Yeah, great.
And then let's wrap up with Void Rivals number 23 from Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman and art by Connor Hughes. We did a podcast just this week called The State of the Energon Universe where we talked a lot about what's going on, and so let's get into what's happening in this very issue, because I do think what we talked about on that podcast is reflective of what's happening here.
Yeah, so we get, Unity is happening, it seems like, and people are excited about it, and, and then I was excited to see Radimus Prime there, so that was cool. That giant robot hand kind of seems very ominous and seems like that could be bad, but maybe it's good. But, excited to see what's going to happen. Amazing art, interesting mashup of characters. So I'm still nostalgia bathing and having a blast with this.
I still don't know what's happening in a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is
that weird that we're 23 in and you're still kind of feeling that way?
Yes, I do think that's weird. There's a lot of different trains running between the Skuxoid stuff, the Unity stuff, the Transformer stuff.
Skuxoid stuff is heartbreaking.
Yes. You know,
it continues to be heartbreaking.
I know. It's like Gnome and Rumoral shit up in here. You know what I'm talking
Jesus.
About?
Yeah, stumbling left and right over here.
The ominous hand coming through the portal is really cool. It's like we talked about. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff in here. Just feels like it's hard to grasp it. It's hard to like be like, this is actually the narrative spine of the story, because it's like everything has equal weight. And the best Kirkman stuff, I feel like, you know what has – Invincible is like, you know what has the weight. And like it's driving through all that stuff even though it's wildly complex. And this one, it's so even-handed, it's just harder to hold on to. But, I mean, we still keep reading because we got that E-N-E-R-G-O-N Energon.
Oh, yeah, man. Right?
There's nothing more Energon than Pete right now.
I just feel that, like, yeah, it's not making sense, but I'm still liking all the characters and the art, and I'm still along for the ride. So I'm not upset about the ride yet, but it would be nice if things started connecting in a way that I could follow, for sure.
Yes, indeed. And speaking of following, you can follow... us on all sorts of different websites and social
follow
media
Justin
channels.
Around Brooklyn, you know what I mean?
Like, follow me around Brooklyn. Go on an adventure. We can do a whole Jeffy from Family Circus all around BK. But you can follow us on Blue Sky, on Instagram, TikTok, Threads. Check us out at comicbookclublive.com. We've got Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Sons of a Gun, where we're covering some Peacemaker stuff. We got Let's Hear It for the Boys. We're about to cover Gen V. We've got some Marvel Zombie stuff, which is coming out today, I think. So we can do that. And please, we will see you next time here on The Stack.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Slaps only to the death.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.